everyone, and welcome to Upzoned, a Strong Tones podcast where each week we select just one big story from the news and we upzone it. The story can have anything to do with the Strong Tones conversation, be it infrastructure, policy, politics, the built environment, you name it, just any story that we think is deserving of a little further discussion. I'm Kia, and this week we're mixing it up again. I've invited my colleague Jacob Moses to be our guest this week. How are you doing today, Jacob?
Hi, Kia. I'm doing good. I just threw down some breakfast tacos for lunch, so I am feeling nice and ready to chat.
Well, that sounds delicious. I had an extensive enchilada for lunch as well. Now everyone knows what we had for lunch. So Jacob, actually, I asked you to upzone our story this week, and you chose one that I think is pretty interesting. I would actually just love to give it to you to tell us about it.
Sure. So the article I picked is about Walmart seeking to reimagine the shopping area near its stores. So specifically, their supercenters and their neighborhood market format stores. Of course, with the parking minimums of our country, these stores are surrounded by lots of parking. If you drive to these stores on the outside of town, they're probably surrounded by some vacant lots. So what Walmart is trying to do with its continual innovation that it always advocates for is to reuse some of these spaces, like the big parking lots and the empty vacant lots, for more productive uses to recreate its own town centers. And Kia, there are things about this that are exciting in relation to Strong Towns, specifically kind of reimagining how we can have more productive uses for parking. There are things that are, of course, concerning when you have a corporation like Walmart pioneering something like this. And then there's something also really exciting about how the grocery will play in the role of the health of our neighborhoods of the future, which I'm all very excited to chat about with you.
Yeah. So the article specifically is called Walmart Seeks to Reimagine Shopping Areas Near Its Stores from talkbusiness.net. And as always, you can read it yourself. Just click the description and we have a little link for you. But this story has actually been picked up by a few different outlets over the last week. And there's a lot of buzz about, I think the New York Times put it best, this question of, can you curate a town? Can you make a town out of thin air? And Walmart's take on it is particularly interesting. I know that you, like me, Jacob, have a little bit of experience as in small business. Specifically, you were a small business owner for a little while. You ran a corner store called the Blueback Market. Do I remember that right?
That's right. That's right.
How does your experience as a small business owner who was trying to create the sort of towns, like fine-grained town neighborhoods that Walmart is now trying to conjure in its parking lots and things like that, impact the way you read the story?
Yeah, so I'm with you, Kia. It's hard to kind of create your own little town center and have it feel authentic. What's happening with the town centers that Walmart is proposing to create is that on the border, there's like an existing urban village that's being developed. So there's going to be some residents there to make it feel like a true, complete neighborhood. From my experience of running Blueback Market, I was kind of in this weird in-between place of we're close to this like authentic, complete neighborhood, but we're also close to this kind of manufactured urban neighborhood. So it was a strange mix, but it's great to see that grocery is at the focal points of this conversation. That's something that I think is particularly exciting.
Yeah, I mean, the grocery conversation is sort of tricky in any town, especially towns that, you know, I might be a little bit more on the vitriolic side of this story than you are. You're making some very balanced, interesting points about, you know, maybe this is a better way to use parking. Maybe this is an evolution away from the big box model towards something better. I look at this story and I say, Walmart killed the grocery stores and the small town businesses that it's now trying to recreate in sort of a Disney-fied version all at once.
Yeah, that's we have to be leery of it. I mean, I think Sam's Club, they closed 63 stores this past January. So what if it were to be the same case with this concept? They try it out. Hey, it doesn't work. We dip. So we definitely can't put all of our eggs in one basket and hope that Walmart is the future of creating productive town centers.
I actually grew up really close to a Kmart that backs up onto something that functions a little like a town center. It is, you know, won't sugarcoat it. It's a strip mall, and but it has a nice little island with, you know, a Quiznos and some other little neighborhood restaurants. There are some crosswalks that are painted in, and of course, it backs up straight to a living complex. So this was master planned. This complex by my parents' home was master planned by the condo developers. They thought that they could have a big box store with a number of other businesses surrounding it, and that it would function more like a downtown while also giving access to the kind of big, expansive grocery that would be a destination shopping event for people all over this semi-rural region where I grew up. It hasn't worked too well. Kmart is now closed and has been through many incarnations. I think right now it's a hunting store that sells a ton of guns. Most of the small businesses around it have closed. There's always a ton of vacancy. And no, people are not congregating in that parking lot, and they're not, you know, turning it into an active public space. It seems like the Walmart model is a little different in that, at least from these pretty artist renderings I'm looking at on Talk Business, they're, you know, kind of put some trees in there. They're going to do some other sort of nods towards pedestrianization and walkable spaces. But I'm not super confident it will work. Why do you feel more optimistic about it if you do?
Yeah, I'm excited that it's going to allow developers to develop without regard for parking minimums. So we're going to be able to have these large parking lots, and then we're going to be able to build some productive development. What gets me particularly excited with Walmart is that they're having a focus on attracting health and wellness and fitness developments to come up nearby. And this is great because it's allowing grocery to like break from the four walls that it works in and get involved in kind of fostering the health of a neighborhood. So instead of, you know, you go to the doctor and they say, oh, you have diabetes, you need to eat such and such food and such and such food. Because we're choosing to have complementary developments with the grocery store, I can go to the grocery and then be at next to this wellness center where they can kind of help me make these right decisions to improve my personal health and thus the health of the neighborhood. So maybe the development itself is nothing new and maybe will fail just like Kmart and the surrounding businesses, but I'm excited for this focus on neighborhood health and how the grocery is going to play a role in this.
That's an interesting take. I have a good friend who for a long time worked for a hospital group that was experimenting with a model of prescribing their patients things like food. They would, you know, obviously you don't go to the pharmacist and say, give me a turkey, please. But they would give them a gift card for a local grocery store, and they would give them a gym membership. And sometimes they would leave them like, connect them with housing that the hospital owned and developed, and was taking that same sort of holistic view. They didn't do it through the lens of master planning one place that would have all of those things together. We're lucky in St. Louis that many of our neighborhoods do have all of those things already. So maybe it was just a matter of they didn't need to. But I'm curious if maybe what's intriguing to you about the Walmart model that you're seeing here is that it's starting with that mindset from day one, or am I following? I guess I read over the stuff about the doctors in here.
Yeah. So with the Walmart development, really just basic level, I'm excited that we're having more productive use for our parking lots. We'll see how it goes with being a master plan development. But it is exciting to see the perspective of wanting to build more of a complete neighborhood and considering all the different amenities that are included with that. Will this one work out? I don't know. But it's great to see a big corporation understand that, hey, we have all this parking, we have all these vacant lots. This is unnecessary. What can we bring in here that's more productive for the neighborhood?
Yeah. See, this is why I wanted to have you and other colleagues of mine on here, Jacob, besides Chuck, because I feel like Chuck and I are both the kind of people who look at stories like this and we're like, here's 15 flaws and here's what we fail. We both get super theoretical and negative, like from the start. And I just appreciate having you as a colleague. If for people who may not know, Jacob is our community builder and he's been with us since June, I believe. So you're coming on being a lifer here. Yeah. Yeah. But you've had some real life experience in implementing this stuff and getting a sense of what it actually might take to make the next smallest step in a community. And, you know, maybe you're a little bit less pessimistic these days. I mentioned a little earlier that this topic has been getting a lot of play, both the Walmart proposal specifically, but also the general question of how do you curate a strong town? The New York Times wrote an article about how Walmart, but also private individuals who have a lot of money, are going into small towns, buying up whole blocks of vacant storefronts on historic main streets, and then curating the businesses that they think should go in them. So, you know, if you have an angel investor, to put a maybe a euphemistic term on it, who really likes art, then they're going to line that main street with art galleries and they'll put in a corner grocery store and they'll do it all at once. I'm curious if that model sounds like a better fit than a corporation like Walmart trying to build food stalls and gyms around its store, or if you see some other problems with that model. Which one stacks up better for you?
Yeah, I would say definitely the latter. If we had to choose between the two, have an investor come in. That's how my downtown, I live in Denton, Texas. Flashback 10 years ago, it was mostly vacant. But then an investor came in who cares about downtown Denton. And now we have a nice mix of restaurants, bars, different kind of amenities to make it more of a complete neighborhood. The ideal approach would be kind of crowdfunding these ideas for what the neighborhood needs. So, Key, as you know, I do another podcast for Strong Towns called It's the Little Things. And a couple episodes ago, we had Bill Houston on the podcast. And he talked about this really cool concept of, hey, you're in the neighborhood, you see a void, instead of waiting for that angel investor to come in, or instead of waiting for some kind of self-proclaimed thought leader, whatever, to come in and save the day, pitch your idea to your neighbors, pitch your idea to local officials, and then give your peers and your neighbors an opportunity to support you financially, have some stock in the business, and then use that model to be able to create more amenities of downtown. That was the first time I'd heard of that concept. And we're all familiar with crowdfunding in regards to a new tech t-shirt or some waterproof boots on Kickstarter or whatever. But imagine it in relation to actually filling vacant storefronts with productive neighborhood boosting stores was really exciting.
I love that podcast. That was one of my favorite episodes of It's the Little Things. And I like that thought because it also opens up the possibility for lots of people to get involved in multiple crowdfunding campaigns, a more democratized way of building. My issue with both the Walmart and with the hypothetical rich angel investor is it's fragile, right? I mean, this is what we talk about all the time at Strong Towns. When you have one player in the game who's putting their money up, no matter how good they are, they're still just one person. And if they fail, they take the whole town down with them. When you build redundancy into a system and you get lots of people invested in the future of a place, then a couple of them can fail, but A, they'll have others to pull them back up, and B, the whole thing won't come crashing down if, you know, that one bakery on the corner doesn't, like, it makes up too much of a loss for the place.
Yep.
So I was really intrigued by, you know, the New York Times article, which I'll also post in the comments to this episode, because it seems like, you know, as someone who is interested in cities, I'm sure you're the same way. I have like kind of a SimCity brain in me that really, you know, fantasizes about like, if I could design my perfect town, what would it look like? But when I think about the places I love that are actually close to perfect on life, they weren't made by just one person, and they weren't made by just one corporation. They were made by unfathomable, like millions and billions of people over history. And that's the action that makes places more interesting and exciting, rather than someone who just happens to have a really good designer's eye. There are exceptions, of course. There are definitely, you know, planned communities that I think are really interesting and cool and beautiful. But if we wanted to be safe in particular, and we wanted to err on the side of strength and resiliency, it's usually a better bet to bring more players into the game.
Oh, absolutely. And I know in the grocery industry, a lot of folk are concerned because, you know, Amazon partnered up with Whole Foods and now there's food delivery. So everyone thinks that, okay, retail is going to be obsolete. So there'll be no more grocery stores. And what a lot of these grocery store experts are predicting is that what will actually end up happening is Amazon will be delivering some of these like center of the grocery store items. So the toilet paper, the box of Cheerios, whatever. But we'll actually see more of these small scale specialized shops in our neighborhoods. So we'll go back to having the fish market in a neighborhood, the bakery in our neighborhood, the butcher in our neighborhood, and then have delivery with Amazon be more of those traditional grocery products. So I think with how grocery shifting, I think there's going to be some good things in our neighborhoods, especially for the small players.
Yeah. I hope so. I mean, I have very mixed feelings about Amazon. Actually, not that mixed. I really don't like Amazon. Who have been reading or listening to Strong Towns for a while know that very well about me. I worked for a small bookstore which sells, well, it's not center of the grocery store items, but it's a non-perishable. It's a book. And I actually think it's really crucial that we don't end up delivering things that we depend upon the spaces that sell these things right now. They're an important part of our democracy to my eyes. And whether that means we need to move towards a nonprofit model in like things like book retail or toilet paper retail, I don't know, a nonprofit toilet paper store is really the way to go. Or we need to be proactive in other ways about recognizing the real value of, you know, just like brick and mortar retail, while also innovating and moving forward in the world. That's a conversation that I think is really crucial and is going to keep happening over time, whether we want it to or not.
So, oh, you're right. Yeah. I mean, I'm just as anti-delivery as you, even if it means like to go through, like if you live in the neighborhood, like chow down on what's in the neighborhood. But it was good to hear that, like, okay, at least we'll still have fish markets. Like, should Amazon take over? Like, I can still go get like a half pound of salmon when I want.
Yes. Well, that's actually a pretty good transition into the down zone, specifically what I want to talk about in the down zone. For people who are new listeners, the down zone is where we talk about anything that we are reading or watching or listening to that we're enjoying this week, just because this is a request we get all the time from Strong Towns folks. They just want to know what we're into, whether or not it has anything to do with Strong Towns. My submission this week, I didn't think was relevant, but after this conversation, I'm wondering if it is. I've been watching the Netflix documentary series Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat.
Oh, yeah.
Have you watched it?
Uh-huh. It's a good one.
Oh, so good. So it's based on the cookbook of the same name, which our dearly departed for grad school colleague Rachel Quedna actually wrote about on Strong Towns, because she saw some analogs between the way that that book approaches the idea of a cookbook and the way that Strong Towns approaches the idea of city building, that we need to focus more on process and elements rather than hyper-specific ingredients. The documentary did not disappoint. It is so beautiful and so good. And the thing that I think Strong Towns readers and listeners would like about it in particular is that it talks about like these places that have made an entire economy around one kind of food. They go to, for instance, like where they harvest salt in Japan, and, you know, in Italy, where they devote a lot of their energies to butchering really exquisite hogs. And it's just, first of all, it's like mouthwatering and scrumptious and beautiful cinematography. And it's also just very comforting to watch someone cook this stuff at the end of the episode. But it also raised some really interesting questions for me about how can we preserve artisan economies, right? Like, we talk about agility and diversity all the time in strong towns and how you need lots and lots of industries to make sure that you have fail safes if, for instance, Amazon decides to go into pig raising and wipes out your Italian pig village's livelihood. But it just started my gears going on, like, how do we do that while also preserving these ancient traditions of, you know, people making miso? And they were talking about, like, how really high quality soy sauce and miso is, like, not going to exist soon because people don't make barrels, you know. And that just, like, kind of set my brain going in a different direction. I bet I'll write an article about it eventually. What about you, Jacob? What have you been enjoying lately?
Well, going back to that show, watching her cook made me feel better about the amount of Himalayan sea salt I use in my dishes.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I was like, I am not alone in like half a dozen shakes over the pot.
Yep.
Not much television these days, but reading a really enjoyable book called Dying and Living in the Neighborhood by a gentleman named Prabhjot Singh. And this book is all about how we can help people assemble healthier lives in their neighborhoods. So instead of having this centralized form of healthcare where we go to the doctor or we go to the hospital, like, what happens once we get discharged? What happens once the social worker stops checking in on us? And pretty early on in the book, so I haven't dug in too deep yet, but it keeps asking this really profound question, and that is, what is the role of neighbors helping neighbors assemble healthier lives? And I'm not very well versed in healthcare. So from my level of knowledge, that's like, I should be aware if like the neighbor across the street's like lights haven't been on for a couple of days or their car hasn't moved. So it's really helping me think, how can I be a better neighbor in regards to helping people live healthier lives? So that's been a wonderful book. And then another one I'm reading is called Grocery, The Buying and Selling of Food in America. And this book has been really eye-opening as well, because they're talking about a lot of the same things that Prabhjot's talking about, and that's how we can provide health in our neighborhoods outside of the hospitals and these health institutions. This book goes so far to say that they think grocery stores will be the future of healthcare clinics, that say traditional medicine becomes more popular. Like you mentioned before, Kia, you're prescribed different kinds of foods as opposed to prescriptions. And then you roll up to Blue Bag Market, whatever your Heinen's, shout out to Cleveland.
Yeah.
Roll up to your
goal is more my territory, but I grew up.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love the name of that grocery store.
Yeah. So you roll up to these grocery and you're told to eat chard. And you're like, okay, like what's chard? Okay, here it is. How do I cook this? It doesn't look very appetizing. But to be able to have someone in the grocery who can say, here's the rainbow chard. Here's the best way to cook it. This is how you can make it taste good. This is why it's nourishing for you. So it was really exciting to hear, despite all this talk of the end of retail, the end of grocery, the rise of Blue Apron, which just makes me shake my head, that like grocery can play a really significant role in boosting the health of people's lives in a really like good way. So those are the two things I'm messing with these days.
Great stuff. Well, that's our time. Thank you so much for listening into UpZone. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes. And also while you're there, check out It's the Little Things. It's a fantastic podcast hosted by Jacob, who happens to be talking to me this hour, that tells you in really concrete, awesome terms how to make change in your neighborhood, featuring some fantastic guests. It's been one of my favorite listens this week. You can also support us by joining the movement at strongtowns.org/membership. And of course, by doing what you can to build a strong town. Take care, everybody.